You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Cristo en este. Cristo en este.
What is that exactly?
I'm pretty sure that's Greek for happy Easter, or at least that's what I got from my big fat Greek wedding. But I think I'm probably saying it wrong. So sorry to Greek listeners, but happy Easter. It's Easter Sunday.
It is Easter Sunday here. You're hearing this on Monday, hopefully, if you're listening to it the first day it comes out. But today, as we record, it is Easter Sunday, and this is a joyous Easter Sunday for me because this is the first Easter Sunday in which we are not spending any time with family.
Oh, God, that's the good Lord's special gift to you this year.
It is, in fact. I am not doing anything. I don't have shoes and socks on. I'm not putting shoes and socks on. I will not be leaving a carpeted area for the entire day.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it is wonderful.
Fortunately and unfortunately, holidays are like Julie's Super Bowl, so we're having like 16 people over for dinner, and it should be awesome. Lots of good awkward family moments, so it's going to be swell. It's going to be really good. Lots of good food, though. Italians know how to lay it down when it comes to the food.
Well, we would be doing that, except that we got together earlier this week. We all got together for a big family portrait, and then we all went to dinner afterward, and I think that was Thursday. So it just kind of seemed like, okay, you know, we've shot that. We got nothing else to talk about. So let's just skip Easter since we just spent the whole day together. I mean, there's just only so much you can do, you know, so much you can talk about.
I'm tired of looking at your face. Let's skip Easter.
And we got the family portrait done. And I did want to point out that I thought it was something that was funny was when I posted the portrait online, and it's like there's 4, 5, 6, like 10, 12 of us, I think. And in the picture, I said that my niece had managed to wrangle us all together for a group portrait. And I think that maybe a few people thought that my niece had taken this picture.
Oh.
And someone commented, "Not bad for a photographer." And and I thought, there's 3 head swaps. I had to fix a hand. The 2 professional photographers were posing and lighting this picture. There is just if this in any way could be mistaken for a phone picture taken by my niece, then I just need to quit. I'm just done.
No, you know, this is just a perfect opportunity to discuss what jerks people are on the internet to each other.
Well, I'm not sure. He might have meant it as a joke. You know, there was a little smiley face, so he might have been, you know, he might have got that it wasn't, and he just meant it because I went back and looked at it. I'm like, oh, it does say my niece wrangled us together for a portrait. But, you know, my logo is on it, and if you look at it, I mean, the posing and the lighting, I would hope, would make it perfectly clear that me and my good pal Kevin Newsom, actually did all the work. And let me tell you something about that. That's what you do. See, we have to do a family portrait, Gary. You call up your friend who's been taking portraits since before you were born, and you say, "Will you come by? I'll do everything if you'll just come by and click the shutter." And he says, "Sure." And then when he gets there, you start to pose everyone, and then you go, "Let me set up the tripod." And then when you walk over to set up the tripod, he can't help but step in and start to fix your posing.
That's how you do it.
And so Kevin takes over, and much like this podcast, when one of us starts going, the other one just stops and shuts up. So that's what happened. I just was like, go, knock yourself out, Kevin. Have a good time, and I'll just stand back here and let you do it.
That's the thing that people do not understand about inviting a photographer casually to like a party or something, saying, "Oh, can you bring your camera?" is because once a professional photographer gets in a situation, they cannot help but do it all the way.
Yeah.
So there's no like casually taking snippety snaps at a party. That just doesn't happen for us. It's like we're setting up lights, we're getting our white balance custom done, you know, we're busting out the giant lenses, we're posing people, we're lighting everything, and there's no relaxation. If we got a camera in our hand, we're taking it seriously.
Yeah.
And that's what people don't get.
You don't say to Bruce Springsteen, "Hey, can you come by the house and maybe sing a couple of bars at Born in the USA? Just use my daughter's ukulele." No, he's gonna bring a guitar. Yeah. You know, he's going to try and do it right because he doesn't know how to not do it right.
Because he's the boss.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was reading an article on Barry Manilow, and Suzanne Somers' friend said that Barry's not the type of guy who will come to a cocktail party and then jump behind the piano and sing a couple of songs because he's such a perfectionist that the acoustics aren't right and the piano hasn't been tuned and et cetera. He won't do it.
You know? I've watched some live performances of Barry Manilow, by the way, and he is absolutely one of the most on-point, perfect performers.
Oh, yeah.
Every note, every movement, everything is so tightly done. Like, he's and by the way, it came out in the news this week. Big surprise, he's
really?
Gay.
Really? Big surprise?
Wait, you're telling me Barry Manilow is gay?
What?
I'm shocked. First George Michael, then this? What's
How can
next?
That be? How
Liberace?
Can that be? And
Who's
he's
next?
And he's been with his boyfriend for 34 years? What? I think we all knew Barry Manilow was gay.
Yeah, if you were surprised by that, you obviously aren't paying attention to, I don't know, anything. Like,
he got his start as the piano player for Bette Midler when she was playing in the Continental Baths House in New York City, which was the number one place for gay men to meet in New York City. He wasn't the only straight guy in the room behind the piano.
Yeah, Bette Midler walks into the bathhouse and goes, hey, any of you guys sing or play piano? They're all like, yes, me,
yes,
everyone.
Me,
like,
Barry Manilow.
Anyone in here into musical theater? Or...
yeah, and let me tell you, and Barry Manilow though he is one of those guys who went far into the world of I don't ever want to look as old as I am. Barry Manilow is 127 years old, and
is that right?
His plastic surgery. I mean, he's got like Siegfried and Roy hair, and like with the blonde tips and the face that has the same expression. At all, I don't care if he's crying or if he's screaming; it's the same expression all the time. He's just
Who among us has not considered a little just for men?
Oh, I would love it. Would love it. I would get a neck lift in a minute if I could. If my doctor would let me, I would get a neck lift tomorrow. Absolutely. Get rid of the, you know, just the neck. I don't care if the rest of the face looks old. I just want to get the neck fixed. That's all. That's all I'm asking.
Fickle youth.
Yeah.
Fickle
I started using the Rogaine last month.
Yeah? How's it going?
I don't know. You know how they are. It could take up to 4 months, they say. Well, that's like $100 worth of Rogaine. That's a nice scan you got going there, Rogaine.
Yeah, my bald spot's still there, but my palms are hairy as crap.
This right? I got like a little bit of a bald spot on the crown there, and I was like, I'm just going after that right now. I'm not going to wait until it's, you know, an island.
Headed off of the path.
That's right. I'm getting on it right now because I don't have many assets, Gary, but I do have hair. It's the only thing I got.
You have great hair.
It's the only thing I got, dude, and I'm not willing to give it up just yet.
It's not the only thing. You do have the golden voice and the great coif of hair. So
yes,
that's pretty cool. But
the coif. Yeah, I mean, speaking of the coif, and we're going to talk about the thing you posted on Facebook today. I want to talk about that, but specifically, I want to talk about Savannah Butler, who in reply to said thing on Facebook said, if someone gets a hitch in their giddy-up. Now, I love Savannah, but who the hell talks like that?
For listeners, Savannah is my studio manager, and she is she participates in everything that we post on Facebook because she's genuinely, I think she listens to the show, but I also think that she wants to not have no one reply.
Yeah, she's helping us out. I appreciate that. Thank you. I very, very much appreciate it. But, I mean, if you're typing, right, on Facebook, a hitch in their giddy-up, it seems so, like, quaff. It seems, you know, I don't know, beyond the pale for a reply into, you know, or anything. Who says that?
I love old-timey euphemisms and metaphors and those things. I do idioms even.
I would say if you don't want to get your panties in a bunch.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah.
But I guess if you know are Little House on the Prairie, you would say a hitch in your giddy up. I don't even know what that means.
I have no clue.
What is the giddy up of which we're speaking, Gary? Is giddy up just simply walking? A hitch in your giddy up, meaning that you have a stumble in your step, or are we specifically talking about a horse?
Is it like a fly in your ointment, a bee in your bonnet?
Well, yeah, all of these are. They're all idioms, but I mean, what particular giddy up are we talking about here?
I could not say.
Get with your studio manager there and get me some definite clarification on what type of giddy up are we speaking about?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that she will write in when we post this episode. I'm sure she will have a response.
Yes.
But hey, before we get started, because we got a great topic, we put it out there on our Facebook page for our listeners. And I was listening to a lot of social media and marketing podcasts. And one of the things that comes across consistently is what to do when you start out. Because looking at like the giant mountain of things you have to do before you to run a business, and people are often wondering, like, well, how do I start? And so I got that theme going in my head, and I put it on the Facebook page today. We got a lot of good responses. We're going to read a few of them. Was what do you wish you knew when you started your photography business? Now, before we get to that, I want to talk about a mini rant that I had, because I found this great article on one of my favorite fake news sites, The Onion. Okay, and I want to first of all point out I am fully aware that's a satirical website, which is what makes me mad. I noticed somebody did it to you and somebody did it to me. Whenever I post something from The Onion and I try to make it very obvious that I'm aware that it's satire, somebody always rushes in with a comment like, that's not a real article, that's The Onion. It's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah. Well, first, before the person does that, a lot of times that is simply a reaction because someone takes it seriously. Someone will take it seriously. And at first, though, you get that person, the person who goes, wow, I can't believe this. And you're like, what? No, you're not supposed to believe it. I feel like The Onion, am I wrong? I feel like The Onion, everyone should know The Onion now.
Yeah, they've only been around for like 35 years.
Well, it was like one of the very first success stories on the internet. It was one of the very first things, like, you know, companies that was an internet newspaper, so to speak, that succeeded, like Slate and The Onion.
They used to actually produce a printed newsletter, The Onion.
But I mean, I don't get that people still see things from The Onion and they think that it's real.
Yeah, like let's start with that it's called The Onion.
Right.
Right off the bat, it's like, yes, you don't see anybody on CNN going and coming in on the wire from The Onion this week. You know,
I tell you what's great is I've read a lot about The Onion actually, and I read some stuff about where they talk about the headlines because they're most famous for great headlines, and the amount of work that goes into coming up with a headline for them is literally like 100 headlines are rejected before they come up with one. And I mean, they are so deep in down the rabbit hole into why this works and why this doesn't and why this is a little too ironic or why this that it's you're like, wow, for anyone to spend that much time thinking about something that's going to be put on the internet for a day and then no one's going to see again, that's amazing that's your job. Yep.
I tell you, I follow them on Twitter and a few other places, and everything they post, I always end up liking it or reposting it because it's so well thought out. The article that I'm talking about in question is this. It's one of this mythic figure, somebody who is a great celebrity but who is just the subject of a lot of ridicule, and I think he's pretty good about taking it out of himself, is Matt Damon. So the headline is, Matt Damon loses $500 to guy who promised professional-looking headshots.
Right.
And the whole article is like this experience that so many. I work a lot with actors, and so this I posted this, and it was like, "Don't be like Matt Damon, winky face, LOL." You know, hire a professional photographer. And the first thing somebody posted was like, "Hey, first clue is it's from The Onion." I'm like,
yeah,
"Oh man,
no, we know that."
And I know, I'm aware it's from The Onion. I love it. And so I had to go back. I actually edited the post and put in parentheses, "Yes, we are aware this is satire." And so just I think anytime I repost something from The Onion, I'm going to have to do that now for those people that just like to nanny-nanny boo each other on the internet.
Oh, let me tell you, and nothing makes satire funnier than when you have to announce it ahead of time. That's to me is the key to good satire, is to go, okay, here comes a joke.
So do you just let the people who think that, like, here's the thing, this is the problem with my ego, is I can't stand for anybody to think that I didn't get it.
Right.
Like that I thought it, and so me and my vanity, I have to go back and add that, yes, I know it's satire, so that nobody can get one over on me. But I mean I almost deleted comments. Like, I'm just that weird about it. But I just wanted to say, for anyone who listens, if I post something from The Onion, yes, I'm aware that is from The Onion and that it's satire.
There's another good site that does that. It's not quite Onion caliber, but it's good. It's called Reductress. And if you follow them on on Twitter, Reductress. But their whole thing is, it's the same sort of thing with the funny headlines, but it's all women-centric. So the headlines are all geared towards women problems and things that women think. And it's interesting as a man, because you actually get real insight into how women think by reading these, you know, crazy headlines that they write in relation, you know, figure about how women think. And since I have a wife and two daughters, I think it's valuable for me to try and understand. Yeah,
you are outnumbered.
You know, just how much a bad hair day can put you into a tailspin type thing. And so, it's called Reductress. So if you're on Twitter, follow it on Twitter. But I had someone come up to me at the Tampa Area Professional Photographers meeting this week, and she was new. I had met her. She walked up and she said, "Hi." She said, "I just wanted to introduce myself and let you know that I'm a huge fan of your podcast. I've listened to every single episode, and I've come a couple times to the meeting. This is the first time I've had the courage to come up and introduce myself to you."
Aww.
And I was like, what could there possibly be about me and you that makes us seem like we're unapproachable? I immediately attacked her. Immediately, I just went after her. What?
Of course.
What are you saying?
Of course.
Are you trying
to
say you can't come up and talk to me? What are you trying? You know, this poor, you know, and I'm sorry.
Did you just Joe Pesci?
No. Well, obviously, I can't because you're attacking me now. Her name was Denise, by the way. But I just thought to myself, if there are two people in the world who, if you listen to their podcast, you absolutely would think I can walk up and talk to these two idiots. It's got to be me and you. I mean,
yeah, there's a complete lack of credibility. I mean,
yeah.
I would probably think that there'd be more people avoiding us
yes.
for other reasons.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
God, if I talk to them, they're going to start talking me to death. That's
but no
what
one's
I
going,
would assume.
Oh, Burangary, that's Burangary over there. We can't go talk to them. They're way too important. They'll shame us. how would that happen?
The two biggest hacks in photography,
yes.
like...
yes, we readily admit on the air, I've never had an original idea in my life. I've never had an original thought. I have no artistic ability whatsoever.
Yeah, I would agree with all those things about you. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can absolutely come up and talk to me. Please do. All right, let's do your thing there, the Facebook post, which, by the way, you shared that into my group, Pro Photo Talk, and I didn't know it. And then I shared it, and I had to go back and delete it because you were you're like one step ahead of me.
Sorry, I stepped on your tail there.
No, I'm glad you did. I was like, oh, look at Gary on the ball.
I got Reductress, by the way, pulled up real quick, and I just want to read a couple of these funny headlines from this funny news website. How to tell if you're being manipulated by a narcissist who isn't really that bad, you just have to get to know him.
That's right. You just have to get to that, which I feel is an accurate description of me. I feel that there are people who have said that about me. You know, Boo is not that bad. You just have to get to know him because I'm absolutely a narcissist.
Here's one. How to delete his number so you can add it back later.
There you go. There you go.
Are you dating or just friends who have sex and see each other 5 times a week?
I've been in that relationship. It's not bad. It's not bad.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, so what we posted out there on the Facebook page today was we asked tell us something you wish you knew when you first started your business. And so we got some pretty cool responses I thought we should go over, but maybe... talk on our take. But before we start, right off the top of your head, Boo Rays, what would you think that would apply to you? What's something that you
to
could
me?
Think of that yeah, that would you wish you'd know when you started?
The very first thing I wish I had known is that simply becoming a good photographer is not going to get you clients.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
Holy cow, yeah.
Yeah, and this is the thing that we see over and over, and the people who posted on this, so many of them came back to the same, it's marketing, 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 marketing.
Common themes, a lot of business, a lot of marketing, a lot of accounting.
Yeah, nobody
like
says,
that.
Oh, I really wish I had learned to shoot off camera flash. That's not, no one says that.
I don't think there's one response like, I really wish I'd honed my craft more.
Yes, I wish I understood the rule of thirds better. No one says
oh,
that.
Absolutely.
No.
It's like I should have learned the inverse square law first.
Yes. If I had just buckled down on the inverse square law in the first couple of weeks, I today would be so successful.
Yeah. So we got a couple of really cool ones. First of all, Sue Voldrich commented that you really need to have a marketing strategy figured out.
Yeah.
And I think that this common theme over and over and over again was that to pay attention to the business side of the photography business. But nobody that I know, anyway, gets into the photography business because they're like, man, I'm really excited about working in my business and working on marketing and working on branding and building a website. Like, that is all incidental, built up to making you able to do photography for a living. And I don't think that, nobody really goes into it like, man, yeah, the sexy, sexy side of this. I cannot wait. Boy, I can't wait to get into these spreadsheets.
Ooh, yeah. Quicken. QuickBooks. Fun.
Ooh, stop. Stop it. Stop talking dirty. This is a family-friendly podcast.
Yeah.
We had a couple other ones I want to point out. Charlotte Fristo, who we've actually had as a guest on the show before, says to start working with an accountant from day one.
Yeah, I don't have an accountant. I mean, I have a tax accountant who does my taxes, but I do everything else myself.
We have an accountant, and let me tell you what a couple of the blunders that we've made not paying attention is that there are so many taxes that you're supposed to pay depending on what state you're in that you don't know about. You know, there's like your unemployment tax, and there's your workman's comp, and then there's your federal income tax.
Well,
let
me back you up, and let's get you started right there. Before you go down that road, let's get started with that basic blunder, which is, by the way, you're supposed to be paying yourself as an employee. Let's start with that, because those taxes don't really come into play until you do that. And that's the thing. There's so many. I know people who are like, oh, I'm a professional photographer. I'm doing this for 3 or 4 years now. They're not paying themselves as an employee. Oh, I hope you don't ever get audited, because the IRS does not like it when you don't pay into Social Security and then, you know, turn 65 and start taking a check. They would like you to pay into Social Security, too. So you need to pay yourself a salary.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point. Is an accountant is going to let you know the things that you didn't think of. I mean, working in business marketing and working around numbers and taxes, an accountant is somebody who helps you see around corners of future financial pitfalls. We had this thing recently where we figured there was a tax that we didn't know we were supposed to be paying that we weren't paying for like the first 5 years we were in business.
Oh, don't tell me that.
I'm not kidding.
See, now I'm starting to sweat because now I'm thinking, oh wait a minute, this is a tax that
I'm not paying this. Well, because you pay your federal unemployment and there's state unemployment. There's like so many different things. And she's looking at our books. She's like, oh, no. And goes, are you guys paying this? And we go back and we hadn't been paying it. So we had to get on the phone with the state of Florida income or whatever. And we made it all right. We had to go back. But it was like every single quarter was a different transaction. We got so much mail. And it ended up not being that big of a deal because the tax actually isn't that much money. It ended up being something to the tune costing us about $3,000 or something like that. But at the same time, the amount of hours it took out of our business having to hustle after this mistake and make sure that we were paying the right taxes it made Julie's life pretty miserable for about a month.
Well, you guys, you pay yourself a salary, right?
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
How do you pay that check? Do you use software?
We use QuickBooks we pay extra for the QuickBooks payroll.
Okay. And that's what I use, Intuit's payroll, which is they own QuickBooks. I use Intuit's payroll. And once you get that set up, it's a pain. But once you get in there and you get everything set up, your state taxes, your unemployment, all that stuff, it becomes just a click. You know, every month at the beginning of the month, oh, you have state taxes due. Do you want to pay? Yes. Click. And then it pays it, takes it out of your account. You need to pay your unemployment. Click. You need to pay this. Click. You just click everything and it just pays it out for you.
You can even set up direct deposit into your personal bank account from your company. You can do all kinds of cool stuff like that. So, you can make it – if you set up the right system, it's not that hard. It's just setting it up that's a pain.
Yeah. That's I don't know if anyone does it, but that's a service that somebody could make some money off of. Is I'll come in and set up your online payroll system for you and show you how to use it, and then I'm gone, and you're good to go. You know, who wouldn't pay $500 for that guy to come in and do that?
I in a heartbeat, that would be a steal. It would be an absolute. It would be absolute bargain.
Like Alex, I use Quicken, and I want to go to QuickBooks, but everything I have in Quicken needs to be moved to QuickBooks. Anybody out there who's an expert in QuickBooks who can move all my stuff from Quicken to QuickBooks, contact me because I will gladly pay for someone to make that move for me because I haven't done it because it'll be days of migrating it over and because QuickBooks works a little bit different than Quicken does. Quicken's simpler and QuickBooks is their thing is zero sum. You know, the outs have to equal the ins and whereas with Quicken, it's a little bit more fast and loose.
Let's not kid. It's a nightmare. QuickBooks is a nightmare. I can't even open it. Julie does all of it, but I can't even look at it. I don't want to know what it is. Thank God I don't have to do it.
That's Bobby. Bobby has no idea how much money we have or how much I've hidden away in secret accounts she doesn't know about. She completely has no idea where our finances are.
I'm sweating talking about QuickBooks. it stresses me out. Yeah. But what's cool is with our accountant, at the end of every month, we export the QuickBooks file. We send it to the accountant. All you got to do is reconcile, put all your expenditures and stuff in there, and then she adds it. And at the end of the year, our taxes aren't that big of a deal to do them because we already do it. It's already done on the monthly basis.
And there's another thing you need to make sure you do. Pay your quarterly taxes. Just because you're paying yourself a salary doesn't mean you don't owe quarterly taxes on your business. If your business is making $100,000 a year and you're paying yourself $40,000 a year, that's $60,000 a year that you're not paying taxes on. And the IRS does not like it if you wait until the end of the year to pay that tax bill. So you need to pay quarterly taxes.
Which brings me to another comment from Scott Head says, What he wished he knew when he started his business were the hidden costs involved in the accounting aspects. The hidden cost is, I think that when you're putting your pricing and stuff together, you have to understand that at least, let's call it like 30-35% of every dollar that comes into your business is going to go to taxes in one way or another. Like, it's going to be what you pay yourself, your unemployment tax and your federal income tax and your blah, 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 all these things. We market about 30%. We mark 30% aside from everything that comes in, and we put it into a completely separate bank account that we just use to pay taxes out of. And if we overpay at the end of the year, we've got extra money in that bank account. We almost always have extra, but it's to set that aside so we're never blindsided by a tax bill, which is why with this big tax gaffe that we had this past year, we were able to easily pay it because we had already been setting money aside for taxes the entire time. And I think if you take that out right away, it's going to be your equivalent of like when you have a job that pays you and takes the money out your tax return every year. If you are a business owner, I just want to say, unless you've got like six kids, you're probably not going to get much of a tax return.
Right.
If you're going to end up paying a lot or very little, or
well,
nothing,
here's the
or
thing,
it's going
though.
To be break even.
Here's the thing: if you're paying your taxes quarterly, at the end of the year, this happened to me last year. At the end of the year, my tax attorney was like, okay, well, you overpaid. We overestimated and you overpaid. And I'm like, great. He goes, so I'm just going to apply this towards your first quarter payment. Oh, so I'm not getting a check back? No, you're not getting a check back. Now, when you think about it, now, at the end of the first quarter, I didn't have to write a check to the IRS because, you know, they already had the money. So, in effect, I had more money in my bank account. But still, it's not the same as getting a check.
It's not.
It's nice to get the check, but you never get the check. When you own a business, you never get a check back from the IRS because if you overpay, you just apply it towards next year's taxes.
I got a neighbor who's a firefighter and his wife is a teacher and they got three kids. They get like $6,000-$7,000 back in taxes every single year. And you know when they get their tax check because it's like, oh, they resodded their lawn or, oh, they got a new roof or, oh, they bought a new car. It's like you can always tell when their tax check comes in because something new appears at their house or like something really nice gets done.
Let me ask you this. Are you the type of person who would knowingly overpay your taxes because you want to get that check because otherwise you just can't save the money as easily?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I don't have anything to do with the money. I couldn't even tell you how much money I have. Like, I'm the Bobby to Julie's right. Blu-ray. I don't want to know. Thinking about it makes me uncomfortable, but it has to be addressed. Luckily, I have somebody in my business partner and wife does all that stuff in the business, and I don't have to think about it.
But you know what I'm talking about? There are people who love to get a big tax return, and I'm always like, if you get a big tax return, that's not the way you've done a bad thing because what you've done is you've loaned the American government, say your tax return is you get $5,000 back. You basically gave them $5,000 last year interest free and they held on to it all year long interest free and then they gave it back to you. You don't want to, the perfect tax return is the one where they go, okay, your taxes are done and you're dead even. Or $100 one way or the other.
Yeah.
But if you're getting back like $5,000 or $6,000, no, because that money you could have been saving that money in a mutual fund or in your retirement account and earning big interest on that. And when you say that to some people, they'll go, no, because if I had been paying less in taxes throughout the year, I wouldn't have put that money away. And I think, well, that's a shame because that's how you make money in this world. Compound interest, baby. That's how you make money. So if you find yourself getting a big tax return every year, you know, like your friends there with the three kids, they need to, you know, make some adjustments in their tax form so that they're paying less throughout the year and open up a little savings account or whatever to save that money.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I couldn't agree less because I just am not going to do that. But I totally get your point.
Are you the type of person who knows how much money he has in his checking account by going to the ATM and sticking the card in and having the thing come out and tell him?
I am the type of person who I will spend money until my wife goes, stop spending money.
That's Bobby.
I get to the checkout counter. I'm like, oh, the new issue of Vanity Fair and a Snickers and some Tic Tacs and a Coke. Like they put that stuff there for me. I'm not thinking of like, oh, well, are we going to stay within our household budget for entertainment? No, I'm like, I have to have that on Blu-ray or I'm going to spend $45,000 on iTunes this year. Like whatever it is, you know. But luckily, I only have access to one account. And that's our personal checking. And Julie knows which one I have. And so she doesn't mess with that too much. So
I must be wonderful to have that because I'm like Julie. Every time I spend any money, I'm thinking about where our finances are. But you and Bobby are just like, eh.
I have enough anxiety, okay, about other things. I don't need that too. I don't think
there's no reason for both people to have it mentally. Either. I mean, there's no reason for both people to have it. You know, absolutely. I've got that anxiety, and she's got the anxiety of, I don't know, worried about the kids in school and all the stuff she takes care of that I don't even know. I don't know the names of their teachers. I don't know when the conference is or why. I don't know what homework is due or when their project is due. I don't know any of that stuff, and I think it's a fair trade. I do know when our quarterly taxes are due and when the unemployment taxes are due and all that kind of stuff, and she doesn't.
I don't know. Diversify.
And put it off into two little areas.
Nope. All right, we got a couple more comments I want to get to. I think that are pretty cool here. Carol Deanna writes in, what pitfalls to avoid, what not to do early, and the best free marketing and the best marketing to pay for. She says, I feel like someone is always trying to call me to try and get my money to market for me. And so there's kind of a lot to unpack in there, but I think that the things like to avoid, for me, the biggest thing to avoid would have been, I worried so much about what other photographers were doing, especially in my area, and I would like get down on myself a lot looking at other people be successful. I have the type of personality when anybody else is doing good, I hate them.
Yeah.
I don't really like good for you, buddy. No, I'm not really all that community minded when it comes to that. I am now, but when I started, I just wanted to be successful so fast, and the magic words were slow growth curve. Like, it's a small business with a pretty slow growth curve. Like, you can do pretty well, but like there is a point, I would say for most photographers, it's probably 5 or 6 years before you really get legs under it. There are people that do it sooner and people that don't, but that's sort of what I wish I'd have known, that it was going to be okay and I wouldn't have stressed out about so much what everybody else was doing. That's the thing I would want to avoid, is just worrying about anybody else, just finding my own way to do stuff.
Yeah. I agree with that. I'm thinking about I did that too. You really worried about every single, why these people are ahead of me on the Google search, and what does that mean? And they must be making tons of money. No, it doesn't mean that at all.
No.
You know?
They could be bringing in lots of money and spending it all, and they could be broker than you are.
I think it's so hard to, at the very beginning, figure out, this is what I want to be, this is what I want to charge, and I'm sticking to this. So it's really hard because you don't know. You know, you're trying to figure it out. You don't know who you want to be. You don't know what you want to charge. And come on, you've met those people that do that, right? You've met those few people who are like, right out of the gate, they're like, oh, but I'm a high-end blah, blah, blah portrait photographer or whatever. And you're saying to yourself, no, you're not. Your work sucks and you're going to fail. And they do. You know, they do. they fail, and they're like, well, the market just wasn't ready for me. No, you weren't ready for the market. I mean, you know, so there's a line there. You can't just go too far in that direction. But you're right. You've got to stop looking at the people who are behind you or in front of you, really.
You know what would have been cool when we started our business is we're like, take everything that we can get, take every job, and we didn't know what we were going to be. And as our focus has narrowed, I've just gotten happier and more successful and more relaxed about our business. The more that we got, because before it was like seniors, weddings, commercial, architectural, anything, just any job. Like, I'm photographing parties and everything that I can get, birthday parties, whatever I can do, I'll just do it. Give it to me. Bar mitzvahs, I'll do the whole thing. And now we just have the narrowing of the focus has been so cool. It's like it took us, but here's the thing. I don't think that you can do that right off the bat. I think it takes some time to figure out what you want to do and who you want to be. And I think that not stressing out about that, it will fall into place if you're doing the right things. I think that trying to do everything all the time, like, it stressed me out. And now that our focus is narrowed and we're really moving forward with sort of our mission, and that may change over time, man, I feel a lot better. I'm a lot happier.
Well, I know you're a lot happier. I mean, who wouldn't be happy? You've locked into a niche that works for you and you're making a good living at it. But I agree. I did the same thing. I did everything. I shot everything. And I still do take a lot of stuff, but I don't push in a lot of areas. Only in really a couple of areas do I push in. I'm not out there beating the canvas trying to get more dance studios to hire me or, right. You know. So I'm narrowed my focus on two or three things that I kind of push on a little bit. And another thing also, another pitfall I would say to look out for is this can be good a little bit, but I remember talking to somebody who was advertising on The Knot or Wedding Wire. And they were paying for like the top premium package. And I said, you know, wow, that's like, you know, a couple grand a year or whatever, $3,000 a year. So it was like $350, $400 a month. And I said, are you seeing a return on that? And he said, well, we're getting, you know, enough weddings every year to at least pay for the marketing. And I'm like, that's a fail.
Yeah.
Because now you're working two or three weddings a year to pay for the advertising that brought you the weddings. You have no money, no profit, and you just spent 3 weeks working for nothing. That's no.
We could do a whole episode on advertising in like wedding blogs and magazines and stuff. But yeah, I mean, there are so many ways to get yourself out there that are smart and free or very inexpensive. That I think that spending that kind of money, especially when you start out. But I find more in like the wedding industry, people who spend a lot of money in advertising, they really, it's just sort of like telling other wedding vendors you're here.
Right.
Like making other people in the... So I think that there's a calculated amount of expense that you can do that, because if other vendors know you exist and hear your name, it could start your referral network. But you really got to look at, exhaust every way that doesn't cost that much money to get your name out there before you start laying out yes. big sums of money. And there's no, like, advertising should not be a break-even prospect.
No. No. And when people call me and try to solicit me, which I don't get much anymore, but when I used to get it all the time, and they go, oh, you should up with us on the Knot or the Wedding Wire, and it's going to cost this much. And I'd be like, okay, if you want me to spend $4,000 a year, I'm going to need to pull $30,000 in weddings out of that. And yes. the girl would be like, oh, well, you know, I'm like, you understand that I shouldn't be spending 50 or 80% of my budget on advertising. We're not selling cereal here. Yeah. You know, we've got other expenses. By the way, about 80% of your price of a box of cereal is advertising, is what I'm referring to, if you didn't know. Mm-hmm. And you've got to be smart about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want to do one thing. I want to get to Savannah Butler's comment, and then we'll finish, because I think hers is probably one of the things that's just like advanced level ninja marketing stuff. It's an excellent point. So Savannah writes in response that you need to be confident in your pricing, specifically when you are telling potential clients your rates. I used to be terrible at this, and if I didn't get a response right away during the silence in between telling people my price and then deciding to book or not, I'd be too quick to offer discounts. I wish I knew to just shut up and wait. I think that is so absolutely true, because especially in-person sales, that's true in all kinds of things. And I remember hearing from another friend of mine who was telling me that their salesperson just stares at people, like lays it out yeah. and just looks at them.
Yeah,
just,
here's my price.
This is it. Yep, there it is. And it's like being able to ride that uncomfortable wave of silence, you know, to a good sale. And also being confident in what you charge is pretty...
It's hard. It's so hard. This particular comment by Savannah, I just want to say, does give me a slight hitch in my giddy up. But other than that, I'm okay with it.
Well, you should see a doctor, because you don't want to have a hitch in your giddy up.
But it's very hard, because you want the deal. You want the I want the business. I want the business. I want the business. I'm trying to build a brand. I'm trying to build a business. I want the business. I want the business. You've got to be – no, you can't cheapen yourself.
Especially if the temptation is, especially if you're new or if you really need the money. And you can't say, hey, look, if you can book a job for $500, but here's the thing, you're shooting yourself in your foot, you might have booked it for more. And one of the best pieces of business advice I got very early on is you have to act bigger than you are. And I think we all do that, but it's almost like dating. Like if you're single and you don't like, and you really like are out there trying really hard, there's this weird like stink of desperation yeah. that the opposite sex can yeah. always sense. Yes. Yeah. It's like why when you're in a couple, you're so much you attract.
Well, it's like that. Yes, like I say that once you get married, women start hitting on you, and it's because you don't act like a guy who's looking to get laid anymore.
You mean you're acting like a normal person?
Yes. And they like Absolutely. That. They're attracted to it.
Yeah, when you're not like on the desperate prowl anymore, hey, you're like a
how you doing?
Like the skinny wolf hanging out of the back of the pack, just trying to get scraps. You know, be the alpha, be the big dog.
Yeah, listen. The first time somebody said to me, you know, can you match a price or do you offer a discount? And I just looked him straight in the eye and said, no, I'm sorry, I don't. It was very liberating.
I offer a premium service, and I charge a premium price.
I offer a premium service, and I charge a premium price. That's what the kid said to me at Circuit City in the 90s when he was telling me how much he was going to charge to carry my TV home for me in his personal delivery service. I said, that seems expensive. He said, I offer a premium service, and I charge a premium price. And he looked me straight in the face like, idiot. Like, this is just the way it is. It's just a fact of it. You know. And I thought, wow, the balls on this kid.
But you know, I bet you that kid's doing pretty good right now.
Yes, he's probably CEO of some company. Yeah,
Speaking of CEOs, Gary's stock tip of the week, company called Yext, which is like a kind of like a mix between the Yellow Pages and online directory and stuff. Check them out. They're trading publicly now. They just jumped 22% in the first week of their stock trading publicly, and the company's now worth $1 billion, and it's going up. So if you buy stocks, that's a pretty good tip for the week. That's not insider trading.
This is weird. We've never done that before. What brought this up?
I don't know. I just listen to the news a lot, and that's just what I hear. So take $100 and go buy some Yext, and then, you know, go home with $120.
My stock tip is go back to 2012 and buy Domino's. Did you know that Domino's pizza is up like 200% since 2012?
Yeah, they have had a very successful rebranding and marketing campaign to bring back, because it was like Domino's was the crappy pizza place that nobody wanted. You know, from between Avoid the Noid and, hey, we're trying over here, like, there was something in between there that they almost were gone.
Right.
And now they're – and I order Domino's all the time now, and I tell
you – It's not bad. The other day I ordered one. I was like, you know, I haven't had one in a long time. It's pretty decent, you know, pretty decent compared to all the other crappy pizza that you order and have delivered.
And so to finish out this discussion, I want to ask this. How many times have you run that scenario with a friend? It's like, if you could go back in time, what would be your scheme to make yourself rich now?
Oh, that's good. Well, you know, the classic is I would just buy, you know, buy Apple stock.
Buy Apple stock. Isn't that like the number one? Like, you go back to right before they invented the iPod and just buy stock.
Yeah, just buy stock in Apple and you'd be good to go. Or even Microsoft, sure.
But how would you get it to yourself? And how would you tell yourself that you're doing this for yourself? What if you ran into yourself and you just ripped a hole in the fabric of space and time?
What if you killed Hitler as a baby?
You would need to find Doc Brown, and you need somebody experienced in this stuff. So mine would be I'd go back in time, and then I would just – I wouldn't do anything. I would just be like, hey, I got a time machine. Anybody want to buy it? That's how I'd get
it. I think that the old sports almanac from Back to the Future would come in pretty handy, too.
Yeah, Gray's sports almanac.
Because not only could you make a boatload of money, but it would all be untraceable. Because you
got to go
gamble.
Back in time as an old man and give it to your younger self and say, this has all the sports wins from now until 2000 and whatever.
There you go. That's the way to get rich.
But the secret is you have to make sure that your younger self doesn't know that the older self is you, or else rip a hole in the fabric of space and time.
There was an episode of – we're off the rails here. There was an episode of Star Trek Voyager. There was an episode of Star Trek Voyager where there were time rifts all through the ship. So all different parts of the ship were in different timelines of the TV show. And the best line was at one point when the guy goes and gets the captain and explains to her what's going on and what they have to do, they're walking down the hall and he starts talking about, you know, that what you're saying. Well, you have to be blah, blah, blah. And she says something along the lines of, you know what? People are always talking about that stuff and I just don't care. Let's just go fix this. and I was like, you know, I mean,
I do love a good time,
you know,
travel.
When are you going to stop debating about whether or not it's okay to kill Hitler's mother and just, you know, get it done?
Just go kill Hitler's mother.
People say, but that's going to change the timeline. I'm okay with that. What's wrong with changing the timeline? I don't care. The butterfly effect, I'm fine with the butterfly effect. Google the butterfly effect if you don't know what I'm talking about.
It's a terrible movie starring Ashton Kutcher.
Oh, the butterfly, yes, but it was a great short story from Isaac Asimov on the idea that if you went back a million years and just killed one butterfly, that the ramifications of that could become extremely far-reaching down the timeline.
Absolutely, yeah, I totally agree, because if you killed Hitler as a baby, we might not have had, you know, a lot more dead people. So there you go. That would be terrible.
Well, that's a big event. The whole point of this story was to point out that even the smallest change can ripple and repercussion down the line, that just the smallest rock can make a change.
Think going back in time to tell yourself what to do at the beginning of your business. And I think about what I would do, but like I'm happy with how it turned out. And there were times when we were definitely despairing as, what are we going to do? How are we going to make it? And as it turned out, we figured it out. And I think that one of the things is hanging tough, sticking with it and getting good information and surrounding yourself with good people. And I think that it takes time to be successful. And when you start that, when that gets there, you're not going to want to go back and change anything. You know, it's the experiences are going to make you what you are. Yes. And I don't think – I wouldn't change a thing, honestly, yes. from where I am right yeah. now.
I shot professional wrestlers on green screen once, and I wouldn't go back and turn that job down. I'd be like, that was a great.
I know. I've had so many bizarre yeah. adventures, just taking every job that came.
Yeah,
you know, right? And I probably wouldn't have had any of those. You know, yeah. So that's a good point.
Oh, hey, okay, here's something unrelated, but I gotta just a great story. Did you see a story on the internet this week about the couple that went to get the in vitro, and the doctor came in and said, you know, we tested your stuff, and are you guys related? And they were like,
no.
I don't think so. And they were like, well, your DNA is a match, which, as far as we can tell, you're twins. And they were like, we met in college, and we bonded over the fact that we have the same birthday and that we're both adopted. Yes, they are twins. They are twins. They were trying to have a baby. Married, trying to have a baby, and they found out that they were twins.
Aren't twins supposed to have some kind of intuition or connection? Go, God, this is going to be the worst right? twins of all time.
Well, think about that, though. That explains why the sex is so good, because they're connected. No. I mean, haven't you always wanted to know what it feels like to be a woman? Now you know.
Oh, God. Really?
I mean, you're connected. You're
having such a good, constructive episode.
I'm just saying. You think about it. I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not saying it's all right. I'm just saying that if you look at it scientifically, that, you know, if you were connected to your twin, right? Think about that for a second. Or don't.
Yeah, definitely not.
All right, nope. So where are you going to be speaking soon?
And we're out. Yeah, the end. Thank you for tuning into this very last episode of the Photobomb Podcast. So I'm getting ready to head to Shutterfest in a couple of days. That's going to be really cool. I'll be speaking at Shutterfest Extreme on the 20th, doing a class called Master Your Marketing. So it should be really fun. I'm excited. I've never been, so it should be a pretty good show. And I think you're going to be in Tallahassee.
I am. As a matter of fact, if you're listening to this today, when it hits the internet on Monday, the 17th, I'm in Tallahassee tonight. So if you are in Tallahassee, please come and see us, tppg.org. I will be doing 5-minute photography, how to take a great picture of anyone, anywhere, anytime, in 5 minutes or less. It's a great way for you to get the jitters and the jips out of your head so that you can immediately get to taking a good picture on location and then move to the really creative stuff. And it's at tppg.org. I will be in Mississippi, Alabama at PPMA on June 5th. That's at Eufaula. Go to ppma.net. IPC Live is coming up for a course June 30th. We'll talk about that around that time. And then when's Focus? We're going to be doing Focus September 9th through the
11th. September 9th. Yep. Now, I just want to point out, too, that you did tell me earlier you're looking for some twins to model for your program.
Yes, absolutely. So They're connected. They're connected, Gary. They're connected like, you know. You brought that up. I just want to point out that I wasn't even going there. That wasn't even like a thing I had even thought about until you said, aren't they supposed to know because they're twins? And I thought, wait a minute. The twins are supposed to, like, when one gets hurt, the other one feels it. Well, does that work? Okay.
Oh, my God. All right. So, hey, thanks for tuning
in. Can't tell me, Gary, that if you woke up tomorrow and you were suddenly a woman, that the first thing you wouldn't do was go find someone to have sex with.
I
right?
You know what?
The first thing you would do, well, first you'd look in the mirror and play with your boobs for a minute. And then
you
would go look for someone to have sex with because you'd want to know what's it like.
This is me backing away slowly. Backing away.
You can find us online at photobombpodcast.com. You can find us on the internet on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and look for Photobomb Podcast. Facebook.com/photobombpodcast. You can find Gary at HughesFioretti.com, and you can find me at BureyPerry.com. We will see you next week.
I'm going to say goodbye now in my special twin language.
All right. Activate. See you
Wonder Twins, you're the worst. See you later.